Good morning. I'm reading from the Christian Bible, Luke chapter 10, verses 29 through 37. But he, desiring to justify himself, said to Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" Jesus replied, A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho, and he fell among robbers who stripped him and beat him and departed, leaving him half dead. Now by chance a priest was going down that road, and when he saw him, he passed by and on to the other side. So likewise a Levite, when he came to the place, saw him and passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he journeyed, came to where he was, and when he saw him, he had compassion and went to him and bound up his wounds, pouring on oil and wine, then brought him to an inn and took care of him. And the next day he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper, saying, "Take care of him, and whatever more you spend, I will repay you when I come back." Which of these three do you think proved to be the neighbor to the man who fell among the robbers? He said, "The one who showed mercy on him." And Jesus said to him, "Go and do likewise." There has been a booth team. First, I'm going to talk about the homeless shelter. I'm going to talk about some activities that we're currently involved in just real briefly. There's been a booth team volunteering at the Interfaith Sanctuary Homeless Shelter about 4.5 years. Here are the words of Nancy Rice, former volunteer coordinator for the shelter. "The shelter depends on volunteers who help it run smoothly or as smoothly as it can. But more importantly, it needs the volunteers to be a reminder to the residents that the community does know they're here and does care. The conversations you have with the residents are normal and reasonable and kind. You provide them with a listening ear so they can tell their story in whatever version helps them. That is a gift you give them. Thank you." Please spend a couple of hours with our team at the shelter on a Sunday evening. Perhaps you'll decide these are your neighbors. Perhaps you'll decide this isn't your cup of tea. It's a remarkable place and one worthy of a visit. We recently have reduced our commitment due to a lack of volunteers. Would the volunteers just briefly stand up so people can identify you to talk to you after the service? I asked the team to be here today. Thank you. Please note there's a couple of women on the team, so please, women, take a chance to talk to them and ask them about their experiences. The team will be available for questions and discussion after this service, and hopefully we'll hang out. We're not going to hang out near the table because there's not room back there. They're going to have to just be out and around. There is information about the Interfaith Sanctuary Homeless Shelter at our table back in that corner, and Frankie and Russ would love to sign you up for a visit. Volunteers for our team have to be 21 by the rules of the shelter. Idaho Interfaith Roundtable Against Hunger. Boise Unitarian Universalist Fellowship voted unanimously to become an endorsing body for the Idaho Interfaith Roundtable Against Hunger, IRA, at the annual meeting May 18, 2008. IRA engages diverse communities of faith and goodwill in finding solutions to the root causes of hunger in Idaho through education and advocating for changes in public policy. IRA was one of the lead advocates for the successful drive to expand the grocery tax credit, so that over a period of years, the credit will equal the sales tax paid on groceries by the citizens of Idaho. IRA continues to advocate for this legislation to protect it from damaging changes. Please visit the IRA table after the service to learn more about the nonprofit that Booth is an endorsing body for, and visit with Katie Kujawski, IRA board member. IRA has an important advocacy assignment for all of you. Take 5 handout from Katie, read it over, and call our senators right now. Tell them that we need a balanced approach in dealing with the current debt crisis and an approach that provides new sources of revenue in addition to spending cuts. Perhaps you see all the hungry Idahoans as your neighbors. So the next thing I'm going to talk about is the Boys and Girls Club of Ada County, and I'm not going to say too much about it, actually, because if you look in your bulletin under a section called Social Action, Eat Lunch with a Kid, there's information about that. I had lunch with kids on Friday at their barbecue, and I had great fun. And it so happens that our guitar player today, Will, works at the Boys and Girls Club. So please talk to him after the service, after you read this over, and think it sounds like something that you'd like to do. Lastly, in the Idaho legislature, I'm going to talk about a calling tree. Bills often have a hearing or are sent to the floor for a vote with very little notice. In these situations, a calling tree is very helpful so that individuals can quickly communicate with their legislators about these bills. If you would be willing to be part of a Booth calling tree, please sign up with Roger, Anthony, or I after the service. Thank you.
We welcome Roger and his friend Leo talking about our role in the food of politics of food.
Good morning again. Yes. Seeing Jim Holden out there, I was reminded. He shuddered a little bit. What's he going to say? Because he was, I think, the first one who got me thinking about this idea of that there is mercy work and there is justice work, and that's kind of what we're going to be talking about today. But I had never heard that term, mercy work, even though I had been doing that. So we have a poster in our house that you heard the quote earlier, quoting Brazilian Catholic Archbishop Don Helder Camara, that says, "When I give food to the poor, they call me a saint. When I ask why the poor have no food, they call me a communist." In our conversation this morning on service and advocacy, that about sums up the dilemma, even in a liberal church like ours. Giving food or any charity is considered a religious act, challenging the way our food is produced or why in a country as rich as ours there are people who go hungry is considered political and maybe not the business of church. I literally feel like screaming every time I hear that they need more food at the food bank. Not because I think that people don't need the food or that the organization isn't doing good work, but I know there's got to be a better way of doing it than the way we do it now. I like what I learned about Archbishop Camara also in preparing for the service. He embodied his Catholic Church's option for the poor and defined through his actions the intimate relationship between love and justice. Vigorous advocate for the poor and defender of human rights that he was, he came to the conclusion that charity was not enough. What was needed was social justice. This in turn required empowering the poor to be the agents of social change. He would say, "Hope is to believe in the adventure of love, to bet on fellow human beings, to leap into the dark, trusting God." For us, it may be a little different, though ours is a faith that believes that we need to put our faith into action too. As Reverend Rebecca Parker reminds us, our UU forebears believed that heaven is in our hands and dedicated themselves to making the dream of heaven on earth a reality by working for justice, dignity, equality, religious tolerance, and freedom. Can we do any less? This morning we're talking about food justice and how we can bring ourselves closer to right relations with food. The food wheel in your order of service that Leo shared with me lays out some ways of seeing our relationship with food as consumers, as stewards of the earth, as the interdependent member of a community in relation with the people who produce our food. And it really is a complex but beautiful relationship. I love food. I like the picking of it, the smelling of it, cooking it, the ritual of preparation. I like the way vegetables look and feel as I walk through the farmer's market. I like eating the eggs that come from the chickens in my backyard. Like many of you, I'm sure, I've wrestled with the dilemma of eating right. Nutritious food, organically grown food, food grown locally. I joined the Boise Co-op when it was a little storefront in Hyde Park in the early 80s and used to stock up on the bulk food to bring back home to Burley. I have grown gardens, shopped at the farmer's market, and been part of community-supported agriculture projects off and on for the last 15 years. I read Omnivore's Dilemma, and for a while was an incredible fanatic on that, and off and on, you know, can really get fanatic about the ideas embodied there. But I am, like many people, put off sometimes that good food is so expensive, even though I know that we spend so much less of our incomes on food than people in most countries. I know that our cheap food policies ensure that many of the wrong things will be done to our land and water. I know that it means that large farmers will be rewarded, that tomatoes will be bred for their shipping ability and not their taste, and that the people who work the land and pick the crops will be exploited. We have a cheap food policy, and yet there are people who go hungry. Farmers make pennies on the box of cereal that costs us $4. Where's the justice in any of that? Do we need more food pantries or better paying jobs? Better cereal boxes in commercials or better prices for cereal grains? For many years, I worked as a community organizer, and about 10 years ago was involved in a 3-year campaign to get farm workers in Idaho included in the state's minimum wage law. Some of you were involved in the work because we made it a part of Booth's Social Action Committee's work and commitment, and were a significant part in playing in support of that work. And because so many people were involved, and because we were relentless in tactics, we became only the 10th state in the country to include farm workers in their minimum wage law in 2001. During that campaign, I met Leo Morales, who was a Boise State student still working with his family during the summers in the fields. I've learned much from him over the years, both about the work in the fields and about dignity under fire. The Idaho Community Action Network that he works for now has been involved in many efforts around food and justice and workers' rights. I asked Leo to talk about his own experiences and ICANN's work around food justice.
Thank you, Roger. So the issue of food and the issue of food justice is very close to my heart. I grew up with it as a farm worker, and I deal with it now as an advocate, as an organizer with the Idaho Community Action Network. As an immigrant from the state of Oaxaca in Mexico, I became very impacted by food and poverty at a very early age. It was in various forms, of course, through the farming that we did in Oaxaca, harvesting the food, through not having enough food during the off seasons, as well as through the absence of my father as he migrated to the United States for work. It was not until the age of 10 that we all migrated as a family, and we settled here in the U.S. We actually settled just west of here, about 42 miles in the small community of Wilder. And that's actually where I did a lot of the work in the labor field. So my father, my mother, my 12-year-old older brother, and myself, a 10-year-old, all became breadwinners in 1989 as we headed out into the labor fields. It was necessary for us to work, to contribute to the family budget. I didn't like it. I would say most 10-year-old children probably wouldn't like it either. It was, you know, long hours under the hot sun and dangerous at times. Harvesting onions was the worst. Onions, of course, have an unbearable sting on the eyes. So imagine that throughout the day. Horrible in the mornings until about midday. Then your eyes eventually get used to it, I guess. So the sting on your eyes, and then combine that with a very sharp knife, a tool that you have to actually get what we get at the stores here. So combine both of those, and then also with the speed. The goal is to try to go as fast as possible with the knife, because that is productivity, and that is what will bring income to the family. Beyond what was in the fields, at the stigma associated to farm work or farm workers, And I didn't like that either. During my adolescent and teen years, it was particularly more difficult as I started to internalize the society lockdown on farm workers and the type of work that we do in the labor fields. I remember when my father would park at the grocery store to do some shopping on our way to work or from work, that I was so embarrassed to be a farm worker that I would actually lower myself in the seats so that people wouldn't see me. And God forbid, my friends would see me there as well. So I eventually graduated from high school and moved to the local university here in Boise. And it was in 1999, the second year of the state campaign to extend minimum wage to farm workers. That is when I started doing, and that is when I learned about advocacy. Advocacy is extremely important, and I believe all of us are advocates, and we do it in our own different ways. For me, my discovery to advocacy was with this particular campaign to extend minimum wage to farm workers. The change that occurred was really an empowerment, a realization that I had power beyond the work that I was doing in the labor fields, that I could use my voice and my personal stories to create social change. And I became very involved with the state campaign by sharing my personal story, by sharing the story that of my family, and by creating and by painting and changing the paradigm of social, of changing the paradigm of work and justice out in the labor fields. That's what advocacy taught me. Well, you may not believe it, but at some point, I was actually very timid and very shy while I was growing up. And again, it wasn't until I actually joined these efforts that I became alive, I would say. And that, to me, is the power of advocacy. That is the power of advocacy, and that's why I continue to do advocacy today with the Idaho Community Action Network, as we work on various issues such as affordable utilities, food stamps, Medicaid, Medicare. These are all issues that are extremely important, and they're all programs that are extremely important that are critical to our survival as human beings. I continue to do this work as well because it helps with social justice at a macro level. While growing up, my parents were able to attend the food pantry to get some food during the winter when there wasn't any food for us. That helped us keep us alive. But it was not until I joined social justice activities at the macro level that I realized that I was able to make changes at a macro level, so farm workers to have a better life, so farm workers would actually be respected by the law, be able to earn a minimum wage, be protected by minimum wage law. And both of those are very, very, very critical, that we must take both into consideration as we continue to do our work. I know here you're very involved with various programs, whether it's at the shelter, whether it's at the Saturday markets, extremely important programs. Now we have to combine that advocacy into advocacy as well, to making phone calls to our legislators, to writing a letter to the editor, because that makes significant difference. And we must be able to combine both of those, because that is involves and that is part of the politics of food. And if we're not part of the table, then we're left behind, and other community members, policymakers, decision makers are making the decisions for us. So as a community of individuals that believe in social justice, it is extremely important for us, again, to also be involved in at the advocacy, at the advocate level as well. I shared my story again because perhaps the part that I wanted to leave with you is the personal growth that I had. And that is also an extremely component of doing social justice, growth either for yourself or growth for other community members who are, again, are part of this community, that are the vulnerable, that are the exploited, and need an opportunity to grow as well, just like I once did. So I leave those words with you, and again, I appreciate the opportunity to be here and share my story and some of the work that we do at the Idaho Community Action Network as we organize, as we do leadership development, and as we move forward to change the system that we have here in the country to make sure that we have just policies and that everyone has access to food. Thank you.
Thanks, Leo. I'm just going to finish up quick here. So what can we do? It's not either or, as Leo said, it's not either or, service or advocacy. It's both. And we have to figure out what our talents are, what our skills are, what we think we can do and add to that effort. I say let's do more justice work, more advocacy, but we need to do the mercy work too, and we should do that. Let's keep supporting the food stamp subsidy and conversion at the farmer's market. Let's keep doing that work. Let's keep supporting the efforts of the Hunger Relief Task Force and the Interfaith Roundtable on Hunger to work for federal and state legislation and changes. Let's keep sending backpacks home with kids at Whittier School until we don't have to do that anymore. And what more can we do? What are some other things? Can we make our kitchen available for community meals in some way? Can we think about something like that? Start a farmer's market in Garden City. Use our pastoral pasture back there to start an integrated agricultural experiment or something of that sort. Maybe community garden first, maybe there's so much other interesting things later. I think that it was in Deborah Smith's vision statement a while ago that was there, right? I think we are only bound by our imagination and commitment. So it's really a question of figuring it out and doing it. This is a little piece of a poem, so I'm going to finish with this. Your gifts, whatever you discover them to be, can be used to bless or curse the world. The mind's power, the strength of the hands, the reaches of the heart, the gifts of speaking, listening, imagining, seeing, and waiting. Any of these can serve to feed the hungry, bind up wounds, welcome the stranger, praise what is sacred, do the work of justice, or offer love. Any of these can draw down the prison door, hoard bread, abandon the poor, obscure what is holy, comply with injustice, or withhold love.